I'm Sally Helm with the podcast History This Week. In each episode, we serve as your eyes and ears into history's biggest events and the lesser told stories, ones you might not even know happened. Find History This Week on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Cautionary tale, Lee, out of Maryland.
Okay.
This is just now, it happened really starting in 2021, but the court case has now gone public. There's a couple in Maryland. Their son is 16, and he comes out as both gay and a girl. Parents are Christian. They're not down with any of that. They're not, you know, affirming it enthusiastically. So the court in Maryland uses DSS to take the child and continue, places him with a non-binary LGBTQ foster family and continues his transition. This is not California, this is Maryland. Christian couple in Maryland lost custody of their 16-year-old son due to their refusal to affirm his newfound sexual orientation and his newfound gender. Accused of, get this, child abuse, the anonymous parents had to fight multiple legal battles in their anonymous, because it's child, it's my minor at the time. This is why it's just now coming out, because he's 18. The whole story can come out. But ultimately failed to regain custody of their son. Prince George's County, where they resided, has been promoting radical transgender policies via the Affirm unit. I'm going to get to that in a minute. You're paying for it, by the way. The boy's case was transferred to Children's National Hospital in Washington, D.C., where hospital staff demanded that his parents recognize him as a girl. The actions of child welfare and hospital authorities raise issues about infringement of parental rights. The Maryland Department of Human Services and local police forcibly removed the son from the home, labeling the parents' actions as child abuse. And the child abuse specifically was, quote, their non-affirmation of a child's gay or transgender identity as harmful and potentially abusive. They were also told, when they said this violates our religion, we do not approve of this. The son was admitted to Children's National Hospital, and the hospital pressured the parents to affirm their son's new female persona, even suggesting they change their Christian beliefs to suit their transgender supportive perspective. When they refused, they lost custody.
Now, how old was the
16.
16
at the time.
Okay. All right. That's
still, it was 2 years ago.
Under the age of majority.
Yeah. And this is not coming out of nowhere. It's coming out of the Biden-Harris regime. This is Daily Caller today. Parents are increasingly finding family court judges making life-changing decisions, taking custody, restricting custody when they will not affirm the transgender, you know, ideology, gender beliefs of their children. Well, the Justice Department is putting judges and court staff through training using federal tax dollars to integrate gender ideology into juvenile justice and child welfare systems.
Gee, I missed the part where Congress passed some legislation that allowed that to happen.
Yeah, and I don't know. Look, with Mike Johnson in charge, it's really hard to say what Congress might or might not have done. I don't know. But this is from the Heritage Foundation. It doesn't say. State courts have for years independently hosted transgender activist groups to lecture judges. This makes this permanent. And this is basically, you go to school to learn the importance of affirming a child's perceived identity, and federal grants from the Department of Justice pay for it all. Now, I don't know if Republicans, when they passed Nancy Pelosi's budget again, knew they were paying for this or not. I have no idea. The grant awarded to the National Council of Juvenile and Family Court Judges established a resource center to train judges, child welfare workers, and other professionals involved with the juvenile justice system on sexuality and gender identity. The materials encourage judges to adopt an ideological framework that pits children against parents who do not support their self-selected identities. Sarah Pershall Perry, she's a senior legal fellow at Heritage Foundation, says gender identity is now being used as a cudgel to essentially break up family relationships.
Yeah.
Using the courts.
Right. You know, from a legal standpoint.
This is incredible.
Well, it is. From a legal standpoint, I'm like, okay, if the parents of a child cannot, or they have to support the decision of a minor child, then how can those parents, not necessarily those parents, but any parent, be held responsible for the actions of a child in a civil case?
You got me?
That's the double-edged sword here, and I know this is setting aside the you know, theological and moral and ethical things that you're looking at from a purely legal standpoint. If, on the one hand, you can't impose your will as a parent on a child, then how can you possibly be held responsible for the actions of a child if there is something that is done that is illegal or whatever?
I guess like maybe like what we're watching in Georgia right now, where both the son that did the school shooting and the father are facing charges
exactly.
in that school shooting.
Exactly. Exactly where I was headed with that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. You got me. But this is your problem. And this is like, this is a whole society system. Okay. Because you send your children to school in a blue state like Maryland. And guess what? They are getting the gender ideology from the time they're in kindergarten. And those teachers are transitioning your child socially and they're reaffirming your child. And then by the time you realize your child has been full on brainwashed, it's too late. The court system is taking the child from you and saying, sorry, we're going to put him with a better foster parent who's, you know.
This is government-imposed political ideology.
Yes, it is.
That's exactly what this is. If Republicans were to do this about a certain issue, say, you know, require every child at the age of, say, 10 or 12 to receive a weapon and receive gun training, you know, the outcry would be endless. Even though that would actually be a good thing to have children taught how to use a weapon.
Yeah, but no, they would never allow that.
Of course not.
I'm telling you where they're going with this. I've been saying this from the beginning. They're building the legal foundation using transgender kids that if you don't want to go to your parents' church, you right. can come to them yeah. and they'll take you from your parents. That if your parents do not conform absolutely to liberal doctrine, you can be removed from the home because it's child abuse. But they need this transgender ideology to build the legal foundation for that, the legal precedent.
Now, what are we next? You know, requiring a curfew or a bedtime? Or you know, you've got to eat everything on your plate. Is that the next step? I mean, it sounds ridiculous, but this sounds ridiculous.
And this is them using our tax dollars.
Yes. Yeah.
To push this.
Yeah. Which any other time.
Yeah.
If it were the other way around, the Democrats would be having a fit and be going through there to find some way to defund parents.
Yes. They would. So, look, scary stuff. We really, really, really need to defeat Kamala Harris. I'm hearing from all over the upstate, Lee. I mean, this one, texter writes, standing in line at early voting in Malden, at least 100 people ahead of me.
Yeah.
That's fantastic. That tells me people are really fired up.
I think a lot of this, and this is just anecdotal and just some of the things I've heard, early in the morning, the early voting is when it's heaviest, and
it
as the day
like it, yeah.
it goes through. So I'm just just estimating that it's going to be the older folks like myself who's like, okay, let's go in early, get this out of the way, and get this done. And so that's what you've got. And then later in the day, because I've heard of some others, my daughter was telling me yesterday about a couple of guys at the company where she works had gone, had tried to go early voting, and it was big lines. So they went later in the day, and the line was gone, and they were able to get done in no time. So.
Yeah, that's what happened to my friend. My friend texted me yesterday, and she went in the morning to go vote, and she sent me this text. Keep in mind, this isn't even election day is my point, okay?
Yeah.
This is early voting. Just tried to vote early on lunch break, hour wait to get in, traffic backed up, police directing. That's fantastic.
Yeah.
I mean, I hate the wait, but now I'm getting so excited. People parking on adjacent properties and walking in.
Yeah.
I had to leave, but do not fear. She texted me, I will be back. Your message to vote early is so important. And she texted me later and she said she said she ultimately went at 4:30 p.m. and it only took 30 minutes.
Right.
So. But I'm telling you, you do not want to wait till election day. Unless, if that's your plan to vote on election day, then you need to go ahead and tell your boss you're taking the day off. You need to, especially if you live in North Carolina or Georgia. It is going to come down to the wire. Joe Biden won by 10,000 votes in Georgia. That's nothing. Nothing. You have got to stand in that line. And here's how you think about it, okay? Because this keeps me motivated. Some people are like, well, does my vote count? I don't think about it that way, Lee. I think about some liberal woman standing in line valiantly, waiting like I am to cast her vote, knowing she is doomed the whole time because I'm going to cancel her vote. Yep. And I'm not letting her get to that voting booth when I don't get there. I'm going to cancel her vote. And I picture that person in my head. She just wasted her time. So think that way. We need you to cancel out these votes so we can get to where we can win. We do not need to wait till election day. And again, to be clear, Laura Trump, who is the co-chair of the RNC, said, please vote early. Scott Pressler, who's done a lot of the voter registration in Pennsylvania, please vote early. And Donald Trump has reemphasized, please vote early. You are not showing them by showing up on election day. You know why? People think, well, you know, hey, if I show up on election day, they won't know how many votes they need to fake. Yes, they will. They can count. It's not going to do it. But if you don't show up, they know how many people need to vote to get Trump the win. And they can decide the number of voting like booths. You know, they can decide the number of ballots. That was done in Houston. Lines go out the door. They can gig you on the last day with all kinds of oopsies. Don't let them do that. Bank your vote now. Go vote in Georgia. Vote in North Carolina. Vote in South Carolina. Do it now.
I'm Sally Helm with the podcast History This Week. In each episode, we serve as your eyes and ears into history's biggest events, major elections, world wars, scientific breakthroughs. But we also bring you into the smaller, behind-the-scenes stories, the unsung heroes, secret meetings, even personal grudges that changed the course of history. Listen to and follow History This Week, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with the History Channel. Available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, in 2022, Democrats all over the country got a load of what Donald Trump and Republicans had done in 2020. Surged forward on the last day on election day to vote. And they went, we'll be waiting for them. And they did. From Houston to Pennsylvania. All kinds of hijinks. Washington Post reporting one of these. They're not actually intending to make the point I'm about to make. But it happened. Pennsylvania's Luzerne County 2022 election, many Republicans live there. When folks showed up to vote in the morning, they were told there were no more paper ballots. Dopes. Did we not furnish enough? Hey, come back later. Why don't you? Some folks did, some folks didn't, but it caused a massive pileup that caused massive lines. Democrats weren't overly affected. Why? Because they like to vote early and using absentee ballots. So, yes, I know that at one time Trump had said vote on election day. Trump is not saying that now. He is saying to vote early. He has been saying that over and over and over again, especially if you live in Georgia or in North Carolina. You need to bank your vote. You need to get out and vote because otherwise you put it entirely in their hands. They're going to run out of ballots. You know what they did in Houston? This was so bad. There was more than a year investigation into this. And Houston's blue county. Texas is red, but they try the hijinks in the blue counties. You know what they did? They had 600 ballots per polling place. And they said, oh, well, you know, we just put the number of ballots there that, you know, historically voting averages have showed us we need it. So KHOU 11, which is their local news station, went and looked. Okay, how many people voted then? If you have the historical number of ballots, how many? 1,800 last time. And you only had 600? Yeah, it's less than half. They did it on purpose, folks. Why? Because they know what we'll do. They anticipated it. You're not showing them and you're not fooling them if you don't go. You have got to go early. And I'm telling you what, if you're going to vote on election day, if you are determined to do it, you take the day off. Because who knows what you'll encounter. Take the whole day off from work if you've got to do it. I'd go early. And kind of what we're seeing is I would go during one of these lull times of the day. So maybe eat your lunch at your desk. Go at 3 o'clock to vote. Go at 2:30 to vote. Go during one of those sort of, you know, lull times. And it makes it easier. My friend who tried to vote in Spartanburg yesterday went in the morning and could not do it. She had to leave. Fortunately, she came back in the afternoon and was able to do it then. A lot of you are texting me, and this is a good thing to always do with ballots, okay? that you're when you had your ballot printed out, it was not who you voted for. It flipped the vote. A lot of people saying that the machines are doing this. Look, here's the thing. I've been hearing this as a reporter in Charlotte. People used to call me and tell me that the machines flipped it from the Republican to the Democrat. Do they do that? I don't know. I've been hearing it for years, but my point is it's not new. It's out there hot and heavy this year because we've got X, we've got free speech, we can say things like this. There's an easy remedy for it. Before, when you vote and you get that ballot that prints out, take a look at it. Because you'll have the ability at the end of it when it's on the screen, double check it, make sure you voted for the right people. When it prints out, if it is wrong, you need to take it to election officials, say, I don't want to scan it. I need to fix it. But pay close attention to that. Go over the receipt before you hit print. It's the best way to do it. And it should work out okay. Several people are texting me who said that happened. They said they were able to fix it. Texter writes, hey, Tara voted yesterday in Taylor's around 3 p.m. approximately. Wow. Oh, okay. So it was efficient. Voted yesterday in Taylor's around 3 p.m. approximately 100 people in front of me. Only took 30 minutes. Good. Texter writes, I was always told if you don't vote, you can't complain. It's like complaining about a problem with no solutions. It's just whining. Another texter writes, showing up to vote also increases the number for the popular vote. It also ensures that no one is voting for you. Yes, absolutely. Texter writes, hey, Tara, just early voted in Spartanburg. 40 to 50 people in line. When I arrived at 8 a.m., line moved quickly. Out at 8:45, everyone has to get out there. Yes, I agree. Another texter writes, I've taken vacation on election day. I look forward to standing in line for whatever time it takes. Good. But again, you're going to want to bank your vote early if you can. It's absolutely the best way to do it. Texter writes, you know, Tara, I was born in the 50s, and I can't tell you strongly enough how happy and grateful I am that I was young when I was young. I know. Gosh, folks, even in the 80s, and really the 90s, it was still so innocent compared to today. Texter writes, hey, Tara, just voted at Easley Library, was in line at 8:15, was the 67th person to vote. It took half an hour. The line was as long, hence I left. Yeah. Okay. Coming up, let me tell you what the Democrats are doing with illegal immigrants right now. They're trying to legally establish, build the foundation for illegal immigrants to be allowed to vote. I'll tell you how they're doing it coming up. Well, the trailer for James O'Keefe's new documentary on illegal immigration has dropped. Holy cow. Take a listen to this. This is Roosevelt Hotel, not in Pakistan, in New York City, rented out by Pakistan in order to reserve it for the Pakistani illegal immigrants who live there now. At your expense, by the way. You pay for their food and their room service and all that stuff. Take a listen.
In 2023, the Pakistani government leased out the hotel for 3 years for $220 million to provide migrant accommodations and services. Now we wanted to discover what other things we could obtain by visiting the Roosevelt Hotel.
Hola.
Hola. ¿Cómo estás?
Muy bien.
Bien, bien.
So I walk in, guy's like, okay, so what are you doing here? I'm like, oh, I'm looking for asylum, refugee status.
¿Tiene su documento de inmigración?
No, lo que dije al señor que perdí todo en el camino entre Texas y Nueva York, no tengo nada.
Okay, ¿tú tienes un ID?
No tengo nada.
¿No tiene nada de nada?
Nada.
Then he was talking to, I guess, a supervisor. Yeah, just go ahead and register him.
Yes, register.
Appreciate you on the clock.
Yeah.
Yeah, well.
Okay. Gracias. He filled out a little sheet, gave me a wristband. He said, do you want refuge in New York? Or do you want us to fly you to another state or another city?
O sea, un vuelo. Vuelo, por ejemplo, si tú tienes una familia hacia otro estado en el país, podemos comprar el vuelo para ir a su familia.
Refugio también.
Ok, lo sé.
And he goes, oh, well, if you have family in like another city, we can take, we'll pay for your flight. The government will pay for it.
Después, si quiero vuelo, se puede.
Tú puedes estar aquí sin problema, sí.
So in a post 9/11 America, a man who claims he is from a foreign country can secure a taxpayer-funded plane ticket and receive a temporary ID.
I'm in the system. That's my number. And they gave me this. They had me sign it, and I was about to get the medical exam.
This paper, sir.
Yeah, this is kind of like, I guess this is kind of like my temporary ID for here.
You've got a temporary ID.
I guess.
Get into the place.
These temporary IDs are used to gain entrance into homeless migrant shelters, including at a place called...
And they go on to the next scene. So they have people apparently in this Pakistani-controlled shelter in New York. You don't have... You're an illegal immigrant? Yeah, great. Don't have an ID? No problem. Where would you like to fly to? U.S. taxpayers will pay. It's okay. I wonder... Because Pakistan's a hotbed of terror groups. I mean, Taliban operates there, so does ISIS. Are we screening or, you know what? I probably don't want to know the answer to that. It'll probably give me nightmares next time I get on a plane. Folks, I don't think the American people really understand how bad things are in this country right now. I mean, can you imagine if they got real news what the lines would be like at the polls? Just on the extent of the border voter drive and how bad it's gotten. Holy cow. By the way, Fox News head Bob Younani, he's the CEO of Goya Foods. And he was talking about, inflation and the Biden-Harris government. He was as a surrogate for Trump. But take a listen to what he said.
We've turned into the land of exploitation instead of the land of opportunity. I've worked my whole life. The average Social Security check is $1,200. People coming into this country who haven't worked a day are getting benefits of over $3,800. This is where all of our tax money are going. So I'd rather, we not pay this to these people and, bring those benefits to us, to the hardworking Americans.
How is that happening? Well, I've explained this before. It's through asylum. If you come here through asylum, and again, we were only ever supposed to take maybe a dozen people a year through asylum, and it was always meant for the most serious dissidents. So it was meant to attract like Soviet nuclear scientists who wanted to leave. And what it means is there's no limit on the welfare. American family of four has roughly a $54,000 limit on the welfare. Well, asylum is one of the few ways you can get around that. But again, it was only supposed to be granted on a case-by-case basis, not in mass at the border to whoever showed up. And that's what they're doing. So they send, they give these people, they give these people the asylum papers. They tell them to show up for the court date. The court date isn't for years. And until then, the Harris-Biden regime assumes asylum. And therefore, you can get much bigger welfare payments than an American citizen could apply for simply by, virtue of being a presumed asylee. By the way, over 90% of them will not qualify for asylum because they're just here to work. So if you're wondering how people who don't speak English who just got here are driving down the road in brand new trucks while you're driving an old truck, that's how. That's where it comes from. We haven't even found all the pockets of cash they're distributing yet. We found some of them, like that FEMA money that's paying for migrants to, have everything from meals to room service to diapers to formula to hotel stays in New York that you and I couldn't afford. We found that money, but I guarantee there's a lot more stashed elsewhere that we haven't found yet. That's why we need Donald Trump to win, and we need a real speaker. And Mike Johnson's not going to be speaker if Trump wins. There's no way. He was only able to survive and stay in the speakership last time, remember, because a majority of Democrats voted to keep him there. He's supposed to be a Republican, but it's really hard to tell. He seems to support the idea of just keeping Nancy Pelosi's budget going forever, and that's where all this stuff is buried inside of. So look, folks, Mike Johnson's not coming back as speaker, not after the Democrats bailed him out. There's no way he'd win on a fresh ballot. So we really have a chance. You know who I'd love to see as speaker? Well, you know what? I'm not going to get into that. Meantime, I'm sorry, and this is all grinding down. New York's having tremendous computer problems today. Sorry. New York Post reporting that New York's Proposition 1 opens the door to non-citizen voting. It's being billed as a pro-abortion rights proposition to be passed by the voters. But if you read into it, it bars discrimination on national origin. So if it passes the courts, it's all you got to do is get it in front of a liberal judge, and you're going to begin to have rulings like you can't bar non-citizens from voting. That is discrimination based on national origin. You're going to have that. Folks, what are they doing? They are laying the groundwork right now. We've seen this from Alabama to Texas to Arizona for illegal immigrant voting. You walk over that border, you go right to the polling place. That's how that works. That's what they want. And it sounds crazy now, but look, folks, when I started my talk radio career, illegals were getting driver's licenses in just like a couple of little really blue places. And look at them now. I mean, they've got driver's licenses in red states. Now they're on planes without ID. And what they're doing, what they're using is this whole idea of, hey, you know, they might have illegally registered, but maybe they became a citizen. In the meantime, we can't discriminate. And hey, we can't have discrimination based on national origin. So what are they doing? They are setting the legal precedent. You need legal precedent for this stuff. Setting the legal precedent for illegals to vote. So what we need, again, is for Trump to win, because we've got to stop this nonsense. As we know, Kamala Harris has changed virtually everything she claims she ever believed. She did most of it in a single New York Times article, flipped the vast majority of her views. So to hear the left tell it, that means she's smart. I mean, she can adapt. She can change. She's a totally different person than she was 5 years ago. She's kind of actually just like Trump. So don't vote for Trump. Vote for Kamala. Well, Josh Shapiro, who's the governor of Pennsylvania, was asked about this. You're here as a surrogate for Kamala. Can you explain her flip-flopping on all these views? Here's how that went.
Vice President Harris has changed her past positions on energy. She's changed her views on fracking, on mandating electric vehicles. And I know that you say that her change in those positions shows her strength as a candidate and her ability to evolve and to learn. Mm-hmm. What I'd like to ask you, Governor, is has she told you why she changed her position?
As I have said, you cited, I think it's a sign of strength. She listened to people. She evolved on the issue.
But why?
We have not had,
what's her reason for changing?
We have not had a direct conversation about this issue in particular. I think what is clear to me, this is my interpretation, is that she's listened and she has seen the power that natural gas, the power that our energy sources domestically here in the United States have in strengthening our economy and strengthening our national security, just as Joe Biden in 87 talked about.
The worry or the concern is that she's just changed for political reasons. Whereas if there was a real clear national security rationale or a reason that felt believable, that would make it more believable.
Well, I think that's on the vice president to explain her rationale on this.
I don't know. I can't even answer this question. Yeah, by the way, so that has been in the last 24 hours. Meanwhile, this. And see if you can figure out Kamala's opinion on fracking after this, because I'm not smart enough to. Maybe you are.
The U.S. Oil and Gas Association calling out a Kamala Harris aide over her constant pivoting on fracking after telling Politico that Harris is not planning to ban fracking, but is also not willing to promote expanding the industry. Huh?
This created a lot of confusion yesterday. So it all started with this post on X from Camilla Thorndike. She is Kamala Harris's climate engagement director. Here's what she posts. She said, quote, I didn't explain myself clearly here. Contrary to Trump's claims, the VP has not banned fracking, doesn't support banning fracking, and in fact cast the tie-breaking vote on the biggest pro-climate law ever, which, yes, open new fracking leases. People know that that's her position. The problem is because she'd initially come out and said that there wasn't going to be any new leases. That's what she made it sound like on X. Well, the U.S. Oil and Gas Association responded. They said, wait, change of plan from earlier this morning. As of this afternoon, Harris now supports fracking, which is a change of position from this morning, in which they, and she's really talking about Camilla Thorndike opposed fracking, which was a change from their July position in which they supported fracking, which was a change from the June position when they opposed fracking. Got it. All of this goes back to 2019 when Kamala Harris was running for president. It's 2019, and she said that she would absolutely ban fracking. Now she says that she has changed her mind. Watch.
There's no question I'm in favor of banning fracking.
Do you still want to ban fracking?
No, and I made that clear on the debate stage in 2020.
Actually, she did. She was talking about Joe Biden at the time. But whatever the case. If you can follow that, you're smarter than I am. I can't follow that. Look, here's how you know, simply put. If you're not for future further leases for fracking, you're not for fracking. It's not like you get a lease one time and it's good for all time and America's fine. Leases run out all of the time. There's no more recoverable natural gas or oil in them. And what? So these energy companies are constantly doing what? Energy exploration. You have to get license for that from the federal government. I don't think you should, but you do. It's ridiculous. We should get rid of the EPA for starters. But anyway, it's totally unconstitutional. Should have to go to state government for that. It's ridiculous, but whatever. We pretend we need that kind of thing because we pretend a lot of things in America. Anyway, so there's constant exploration going on. You need a lease for that, and you also need a permit for that from the government. What she's saying is we're not going to give those out anymore. Well, what does that mean? That is the end of fracking. Whether it's for oil or natural gas, it's the end of it. Because eventually all of those leases will run out. She knows that. They know that. No, we're just going to let them, yeah, but no new ones. Okay, yeah, that'll definitely jack the price of energy through the roof because, you know, Americans can afford that on top of, you know, what y'all did with food. All right, be sure to listen to my Battleground America podcast. Get it wherever you find podcasts. It's Battleground America. Give that a listen, and I will be back tomorrow, same time, same place.
I'm Sally Helm with the podcast History This Week. In each episode, we serve as your eyes and ears into history's biggest events, major elections, world wars, scientific breakthroughs. But we also bring you into the smaller, behind-the-scenes stories, the unsung heroes, secret meetings, even personal grudges that changed the course of history. Listen to and follow History This Week, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with the History Channel. Available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.